We're back once again, ladies and gentlemen, only on It's Last Call. Last call with the alcohol, only on the Last Call Podcast.com. And once again, we're always treated of a man who he keeps getting, kicked off. The AEW and internet wrestling community tries to get rid of him. But just like, I don't want to say a cockroach, but just like social media can't get rid of it, it just keeps on going. I give you on from the Brad Shepherd Unleashed Spotify show. I give you Brad Shepherd. So, Brad, let's start off here with King, Queen of a Ring. It's unfortunately, in Saudi Arabia, it's a whole different story for a different day. But your thoughts on it, what would you like to see out of it? And how has it been so far in terms of the matches and how Triple H is booking it so far?
Yeah, so I was always historically a fan of King of the Ring, the actual pay-per-view. And obviously, with the PLE coming in Saudi Arabia, I'm happy about that. What I would like to see is the king and I guess queen now. We have to be, inclusive. So it's King and Queen of the Ring. What I would like to see is a one-night tournament. When you look historically at King of the Ring, and you would have a Bret Hart, for example, to win, wrestle multiple matches on the same show. And I think that's one of the kind of cool, unique things about King of the Ring is, having to do that to win. So, the way it's on track right now, that's obviously not happening. But for me, I think there's something to be said about a show where, it is X amount of pro wrestlers and they have to wrestle X amount of matches in a night to win. It's a little thing, granted, but that's something I would like to see. Now, as far as the tournament we have itself, it's perfectly fine. We had Jey Uso pin Ilja Dragunov. I know that made the IWC very upset. It was a no-brainer decision. We've got Gunther, who is obviously one of the favorites to win. And you've got a veteran like a Randy Orton. You've got LA Knight, who's very popular. You've got the Bloodline in the mix with Tama Tonga. So I think they've done a nice job of throwing, different pro wrestlers into the mix to make it interesting. And of course, they've had good matches as well. So, I think the men's bracket is looking good. I think for me, the women's bracket is weaker. And that's not really a surprise. I mean, women's wrestling in general is weaker than men's wrestling. So you'd expect that to some degree. I think this is an opportunity for some of the younger or newer pro wrestlers in the women's division to shine here. Now, I didn't agree with Shayna Baszler, being pinned in 10 minutes by Io Sky, or as I call her, Vanilla Sky. She doesn't want to learn English, some of these things you just kind of, are baffling, but, ultimately, WWE can make of this what they will. This is an opportunity to really advance or launch the career of the pro wrestler who wins. And you look back historically at King of Ring decades and decades ago, the winners of that, like I mentioned, Bret Hart, they went on to have very, very successful careers. So they can make this important. You're the king of the ring, you're the queen of the ring, you win a crown. But what does that really mean? How does that alter your career? What are the stakes? And so you have to make it into something. And ultimately, after the winner wins, they'll have to make it meaningful.
So let's start with the men's king of a ring. Because you look at it, it's like, okay, logic dictates it should be Gunther winning the whole thing. And yet the worry I have is he's a serious guy. This doesn't strike me as he's going to put on the king crown and that, it'll be like, oh, great. It'll be like Kurt Angle, Steve Austin, Brock Lesnar. Yeah, we go on to the king of the ring, but they just don't sell. It's just, oh, yeah, we won this tournament. We won it, blah, blah, blah. If you want to see this being sold, as they say, if you want somebody to play into the character, not be too goofy, who should win King of a Ring in terms of all the people that are alive right now? Because I love Gunther, but he just strikes me as, yeah, I'm not doing this king thing. I'm not going to put on a crown. He is the ring general, and he's as serious as black coffee with no cream or sugar.
Oof. Yeah, which is brutal, by the way. As a coffee drinker, I can attest to that. I think that's a good question, though, because, you know, I don't think Kofi Kingston has a chance to win. And frankly, I don't know what it does for him. You know, Gunther, obviously a favorite, but again, you know, King Gunther, again, he's a very, he takes it. I'm not a huge fan of Gunther. Part of the reason is because he is just like an uptight sort of guy, you know, and obviously he has positive attributes. You know, he's very good in the ring and he has improved some with his presentation, but I just think he's a little overrated for my taste. Obviously we saw Jey Uso win. Could main event Jey Uso be king? Could he make that work? I guess it's kind of goofy, but Randy Orton, King Randy Orton, I don't know. It doesn't really seem to be a fit for him. You know, Carmelo Hayes, sure. King Carmelo, that could be a thing, I guess. LA Knight, I'm not sure how much that really works for him as well. And Tama Tonga, interestingly enough, with Haku, right? His lineage. Haku was the king, King Haku in WWE. So there is a throwback there, but that doesn't necessarily seem to fit the bloodline character that he's portraying either. So they have worked themselves into an interesting situation, I think, in that regard. And again, you know, they could forget about this, you know, next month, and none of it matters. It all depends on what direction they take it. But yeah, I do think you bring up an interesting point there.
Meanwhile, on the women's side, I got the sense when I built this, like this is going to be Tiffany Stratton's sort of vehicle. And unfortunately, like every other kid in social media under the age of 30, they had to say something stupid. They had to do something just idiotic. And granted, I don't think she's racist. I think she just, you know, said something stupid. It happens to a lot of us. But, you know, the whole tweet of, you know, calling Jade Cargill a black bitch with other stuff here. Do they punish her? I mean, does she lose to Bianca Belair this Friday? Do they keep the push on and just deal with a lot of stuff? Because this is a company still that's trying to really distance itself from Vince McMahon and all that, you know, crap that came in that his regime. They're trying to be more PC friendly. What do they do with Tiffany right now? And do they punish her at all and, you know, have that wrath of, oh, crap, well, it's back to the old ways. You don't punish anybody to say anything racist because, hey, it's WWE.
Well, I certainly think they need to have a conversation with her and talk about making smart decisions on social media and talk about what she's trying to accomplish from a branding perspective to grow in the business and to allow WWE to do that with her. And so she's just got to be smarter than that. You know, should it make her suddenly lose the tournament? Not necessarily. I don't think so. But I could certainly see that happening. You know, the timing, of course, was not ideal. And of course, as you know, timing is so important in life with just about everything. So yeah, I don't understand that. I think Nia Jax is someone who has actually had quite a career resurgence. I think she has been better than ever since returning to WWE. You know, and she's got that fascinating matchup with Jade Cargill. You know, they could certainly let Jade Cargill run it back, although she obviously is now in a tag team with Bianca Belair. You know, Lia Valkyria, I'm not, she's okay, perfectly fine. Not a huge fan of hers. They could go in that direction. And then the Io Sky thing, I don't really get that at all. You know, maybe if they did a show in Japan, like it would make sense. But when your audience is primarily the United States and you've got a performer who doesn't speak good English, you've got to work around that, and they have to learn English, and you know, they can get creative by using the words translated on the screen so that the average United States viewer can understand what she's saying. I mean, you would do that on Netflix. If you watch a show and you're a United States citizen, you're watching a show on Netflix that's a foreign TV show, you have the option for the closed captioning and to turn on so that it will read to you what the actual words are translated to in English. I mean, why can't WWE do that? It's a TV show, just like Netflix. So that's the direction I think they should take it. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, I'm not overly thrilled with the options. Again, Bianca and Jade are a tag team. How does that really benefit them as a singles person when they're a tag team? You know, do we really think Nia is going to beat Jade? I don't know. You know, so I guess we'll see how it plays out. But I mean, they could always use this to launch Lyra. They seem to be pretty big on her. So you could do that. But otherwise, yeah, I don't know. It's just going to be interesting to see who the winners are. And again, what plans they may have for them after the fact.
Speaking of plans, let's talk about the plans for Cody Rhodes. He finally finished the story. I was very happy about that. I know Duke is still somewhere mourning in his coffee going, no, it should have been 5 years. Then again, but we'll talk about him and Flair and all that later on. But it seems like Cody's already snake bitten a bit in terms of he wins a title, and then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, CM Punk's still hurt. Drew McIntyre is hurt. The Rock has now disappeared for a bit. Oh, by the way, Roman Reigns is disappearing for a bit. Like all the, Brock Lesnar is still away somewhere. He's not suspended. He's just away on extended vacation. How much has he sort of walked into a scenario where there's not really an angle for him built up? And it's going to get tough because the hot heels right now are either tied up for later on stuff, a la Gunther, Drew, Solo Sikoa, and because of a whole almost 4 years of the bloodline, there's not a lot of people that you have ready to go if you don't want to rush stuff like a Randy Orton feud or a Solo Sikoa feud or even Gunther.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Look, you know, when you build so much of your TV product around one faction, the bloodline, right, for literally years, unfortunately, what you've done some good things, but you've also minimized so many other pro wrestlers very badly. So they're not at that level, and it takes time to build them up because they've either not been on TV or in an unimportant role or fodder for the bloodline to destroy. So it is a downside, you know, when you have that. Now, of course, it was important for Cody, and I think Cody losing the first time in hindsight was the right call. It made the story grow. It made the business from WWE grow. That was all good. But then it becomes, what is Cody's story now? Because he was the underdog. He did accomplish his lifelong dream. But why are we invested in Cody now? And I don't think WWE has done a good job of telling us that. There's been a noticeable drop-off in momentum or quality from the show after WrestleMania. And don't get me wrong, there is always going to be a drop-off from WrestleMania season. But this is your new big babyface who's just had his big moment. And instead of continuing to climb the mountain, he's peaked at this point. So if he had a promo segment, and I thought Logan Paul outshined Cody in that segment. You know, they're kind of hot-shotting this match and it'll be good and whatnot, but I hate the stipulation. I'm sure we'll talk about that, but right now, Cody just seems like a guy who's lost, who doesn't have as much motivation, and fans aren't as invested. And WWE has to be able to fix that.
So champ versus champion, and it's only worked once. And that was, I would argue, Ultimate Warrior Hogan, when it was basically to launch Ultimate Warrior as the next face of a company. Usually when it's done, we've seen it sort of either sucks or it ends up in like, well, yeah, so what if I do? I mean, unless they're getting an idea from Logan Paul, like, yeah, I'm going to take some time off for a while. And while I like Logan Paul, he really hasn't helped with the U.S. title. It's sort of, yeah, I have a title and I'm here, and yeah, that's about it. So how much does this just suck? Because it's either there's going to be shenanigans, like a DQ finish or countout finish or something, or they take the title off Logan Paul and, oh, we have another tournament. Not as bad as AEW and their tournaments, but it's a tournament.
Yeah. You look at Logan Paul's podcast, and essentially, if you're a WWE pro wrestler and you're on Logan Paul's podcast, he's going to be feuding with you. Now, he's going to have a match with you. I mean, that's the way it seems to have worked out. So, you know, in this case, again, I think they'll have a good match. It's just a case of, hey, who's someone we can put in this role, because we have nobody else, because we haven't really built anybody else up to that level yet. And the problem is, from a believability perspective, who believes that Logan Paul, as great as he is, as much as he adds to the WWE product, who believes he's going to beat Cody Rhodes and win the Undisputed WWE Championship? Probably, you know, nobody. So you've got a believability problem there. And why would Cody Rhodes want to have two championships? What is the advantage? You bring up the example of WrestleMania 6, Toronto Sky Dome, Ultimate Warrior versus Hulk Hogan. That was a mega event, a mega main event. That title change, where walking out with both titles, that made sense. That worked, in my opinion. Ultimate Warrior was a made man because of that. Cody Rhodes is already the Undisputed WWE Champion. He's already a main man. He beat Roman Reigns at WrestleMania on the biggest stage. What does he gain from this? You know, I just don't know what the benefit is, other than, hey, Logan Paul needs to drop the title because he's got, you know, some other things to do or whatever. And that's fine. But why can't Logan Paul drop the title to somebody else? You know, somebody who's going to be very important, right? Somebody you can really push. I don't get it.
Speaking of believability, I want your thoughts on the new bloodline, which is Solo Sikoa. It's Tama Tonga. It's Tonga Aloha. Because you've always been the guy who's told me we need more believable guys. Guys who look like they can actually, you know, beat people up, and it's not a bunch of, you know, flippy, skippy guys or undersized guys. Are you happy with this new bloodline? And how much do you like the fact that they're being pushed as very violent, very shrewd, and very scary individuals?
Yeah, so I do like the believability factor. I think that makes sense in the sense of, hey, you've just got a bunch of Samoan-looking guys who are believable as ass kickers, right? I think that the issue I have with it is Solo Sikoa. From a character perspective, you know, here's a guy who essentially won no matches after beating John Cena, right? So he went on this awful losing streak. And now all of a sudden, you know, he's the leader of the bloodline, right? So make it make sense. So there was no transition to building him back up. It was just like he lost all these matches, and now all of a sudden, you know, he's in charge while Roman is gone. So I don't think they did a good job explaining that. That being said, I do overall like it. I like where it's going in this sort of tribal warfare, you know, that it seems to be leading towards. I think that that's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be a great story to tell. And I do overall like the people they're adding. I want to see what Solo Sikoa can do in this role. They're giving him more responsibility. They're pushing the envelope to see what he can do. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I just think, you know, as a nitpick there, they didn't transition well with, you know, letting him take all these L's and now he's the guy.
So where do they go with him? Because once again, it's a long-term thing. I mean, that you can tell they're very planning for a bloodline versus bloodline civil war on war games. I mean, that's basically, you know, almost you can, you know, pencil it in. It's so obvious. But what are they doing in the meantime? I mean, as I said, I get the Triple H logic. It's you plan ahead. It's like, you know, in football where you script the first 15, 20 plays and then you go from there. How much does this sort of box everything in? Because like, okay, well, Solo can't, you know, feud with Cody because you want him to be strong and not lose. You don't want Tama and Tonga to lose and you want to make them strong. I mean, it seems like it's like, all right, well, the bloodline a la The Rock and Roman and the whole family is literally suffocating everything, including Cody Rhodes, because they make him look weak, and at the same time, you can't have them do jobs, and yet there's no real, you know, going forward of what the future is in terms of everything because of them planning this stuff out a year in advance, 6 months, 8 months in advance.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And what you're bringing up is a difference between the booking styles of Vince McMahon and Paul Levesque. Vince McMahon, there was more fluctuating week to week. There was more opportunity for unplanned things to happen. Maybe somebody who wasn't planned to win a championship suddenly is thrown into a match and wins the championship. With Paul Levesque booking this far out, there are benefits to it. We've talked about how great some of this has been, but it does box you in. And especially with a lot of the items that are, you know, fluctuating week to week in pro wrestling as a business, it really does restrict some of the things you could be able to do. So there are pluses and minuses to both strategies, but you bring up a great point. I mean, that is a plus and a minus at the same time of Paul Levesque's booking strategy.
We're going to switch topics here a bit. So let's go to AEW. And whether you like it, whether you hate it, it's been one of those things here. Let's talk about their future, because it seems everybody now, I'm reading, you can't trust anybody, because I've heard, oh, they're getting canceled too. No, they're getting a big TV deal. Hey, it's coming. Either the fall or the summer, we're going to announce it. They were not mentioning the upfronts. Ratings going down. What the hell is going on? Like, from what you can read in your tea leaves, and granted, all it's a guessing game right now. I don't even care what Fightful and Sean, you know, Bitch Sap, or even PW Insider, those great guys who do an excellent job, say, nobody's spilling the beans on this. It just seems like, okay, we're waiting, and no news is, I guess, news.
Yeah, I mean, it very much feels like that AEW should have had this deal sewn up already, especially if they were going to get a massive rights increase, as they've alluded to. And I think, obviously, that hasn't happened yet, and they weren't mentioned at the upfronts. And now they have their PR arm, which is the wrestling media, the Sean Ross Sapps and others, doing damage control. I mean, how many times have we heard, you know, it's going to be on HBO Max? You know, Andrew Zarian first started that rumor. You know, there's been a lot of unsubstantiated rumors about their status. You know, significant rights increases. Well, what evidence is there of that? You know, their viewership goes down annually, year over year. Every year they've been in business. So, you know, for me, just the entire package, it doesn't make sense that they would receive a significant rights increase. And I don't foresee the NBA leaving Warner Brothers and potentially signing with NBC. It to me, that's not an indication that AEW is staying. You know, it's not like, hey, we have all this extra money now, we're going to give AEW. That's not how it works. So I think it's wait and see. There are rumors that that through the summertime, they'll still be in the main negotiation phase, the exclusive rights window. And then outside of that, they could explore other avenues. So we'll see. Could I see them staying? Sure. I don't think there's any chance they're going to receive a massive rights increase, though. And that's ultimately what they would need to be profitable as a business.
So this is what it's been leaked, according to a certain website, which I still refuse to name because I've had a problem with the owner of that site. And you can take it from what you want. That they are, the deal is expected to include streaming on Max. I find that bullshit. Involving AEW pay-per-views on Max. I'm not trying to pick on AEW because I want them to succeed as much as I get pissed at Tony Khan. I want wrestlers to have salaries and get paid. But if you're like, what is, I guess right now, if you are a casual fan, what is AEW? Is it a pro? Is it pro sports? Is it, you know, drama TV? How do you sell that to people when you're it's not, you know, WWE, which is a name brand, and people are still trying to figure out, well, how much money does pro wrestling make? Because unless you're WWE, most of them don't make money.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're a pro wrestling company, and essentially they market themselves as, look, we're a TV show, and all we have is a bunch of what we consider really good fake fights. You know, there's not a tremendous focus on characters or storytelling like you would see on TV shows that are not pro wrestling. And so I think they're finding out that the market for that is not as great as they thought. So yeah, it's a tough sell. They have a consistent, loyal audience. They do, absolutely. So there is something there, but it obviously could be a lot bigger without the guy in charge in the way, which is essentially the problem because he's also the funder. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. But I will say this, WWE is doing big business right now. And as WWE goes, so goes the industry. And that should be the case with AEW, but it's not. That tells you they're doing something wrong. And they've doubled down on it versus looking at where they can improve and change. And, you know, that's not the sign of a growing, mature business.
Speaking of change and all that, let's talk about one of our final two topics. Ric Flair is in the news again. And he was once again drunk and yelling and screaming at people and then threatening to buy the place. And I get it. You are a big Ric Flair fan. Marvin the Movie Monster over at Marvin the Movie Monster channel. Big fan of Flair. Duke Loves Wrestling is a Ric Flair holic. There's a lot of Ric Flair fans. How tough is it, you know, keeping defending him and defending him and defending him when it's like, okay, look, Rick, we told you not to wrestle again. Now you're teasing wrestling again. Rick, we told you to stop drinking. No, you keep drinking. Rick, we told you to please just behave and you can't behave. I mean, it's sad because I've always thought he should have been the next Dusty Rhodes in terms of, yep, I'm retired. Send me to NXT. I will teach the kids because every heel, and even babyface, would love to learn, you know, the secrets of Flair and how to get over and how to sell and how to draw big crowds. And yet he's toxic. I mean, and this is from people who love him, like Sean and Triple H or Paul Levesque. They can't trust him because you just don't know what Rick is going to do, you know, outside the TV cameras.
Yeah, it's actually quite sad for someone in his 70s to be behaving like that. It's embarrassing. You know, I would be embarrassed if I were Ashley or, you know, someone who's related to him. You know, he's a guy who is an all-time great professional wrestler who was alive in an era when they were treated kind of like rock stars. And it was before social media and all of that stuff. And he kind of is still living in some ways like, you know, it's the 70s, it's the 80s, etc. So, you know, it's he hasn't matured or evolved as a person, a man, an adult, a father, And, you know, so it is sad to see. I mean, he's a guy who's never going to change. He's kind of like, you know, the wrestler, the movie, right? You know, Randy the Ram. And again, it's just, it's sad to see. And the guy had a heart attack in his Ric Flair's final match. You know, so he's not that far off. The guy could have dropped dead in the ring. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's obnoxious, and you'd love to see Rick be able to give back to the industry. Like you said, work with the talents in NXT. But the truth is, he's just a selfish asshole. And he doesn't have the personality to do something like that. Some of the things that made him great on TV also make him not a great person.
So I got to ask, because you know more wrestling than anybody here. Why was Dusty able to do this? Because he was also the same in a lot of ways as Flair. He was a big, you know, larger than life character. He loved the spotlight. He was a guy who was a rock star. I get the drinking part. But I mean, you look at Dusty, he was almost able to go, okay, I can get along with everybody. I will do NXT. I will, you know, sit, give my knowledge. And you hear all these, you know, people from Roman to Paul Heyman to, you know, Seth Rollins, Becky Lynch, even his sons, even you know, Shawn Michaels, and they will sit there and go, hey, we love to work with Rick. We love doing this. We, you know, I mean, or sorry, Dusty, we love, you know, Dusty was basically instrumental. Why is it that Dusty was able to do this? And Rick, for whatever reason, can't go, all right, I'm going to sober up, check my ego at the door a bit, and I'm going to make a, you know, nice little payday here, nice salary, and even the health benefits, just teaching, coaching, and, you know, being dignified.
Yeah, look, it's a matter of personalities. And Dusty was a people person. And very few people are meant to be able to do the job and also teach or do other roles. I mean, you could look at parallel examples in professional sports. You know, look at Michael Jordan, the greatest player of all time, many people would say, and also a shit-tier NBA team owner. Just didn't have it. And you can look at Larry Bird, all-time great player, great executive, great coach. He could do the rare thing. Dusty can do the rare thing. Dusty could do it as a pro wrestler and also be the coach in the corner telling you how you should do it and making that translate. So I think, you know, it takes a special person. Not everyone can do it. And Dusty had the personality, and I don't think Rick did.
Before we end this segment, we've got to talk about another personality who's gone on a tour and done a book, and everything is WWE's fault or somebody else's fault. And I'm talking about Ronda Rousey. You want to believe some of the stuff she says. You know, okay, you have concussions, I get it. I've talked to a lot of amateur wrestlers and Olympic level wrestlers who've done this, and it's like, yeah, there's a lot of concussions in our sport. You want to believe some of the stuff, like, yeah, you know, people get hurt and dinged up, and I get that. MMA and all that is tough, but how much do you think UFC and even WWE, especially with all her comments of, oh, they didn't give me a, you know, a private jet, you know, like Roman, they didn't, you know, let me have months in advance to train for this, like Roman and Paul, like how much do they sit there and just go, oh my God, we should never sign this lady. This is a mistake. This is buyer be return to sender. We do that. We should, you know, buyer beware, buyer's remorse. Like how tough is it, you know, treating Ronda Rousey, you know, seriously, when you read all this and he's like, is anything your fault? Or is it just everybody else's fault but yours?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you heard Jimmy Smith, who used to be an announcer for WWE on Monday Night Raw. And he said, I believe it was on a podcast, but he said, everybody behind the scenes essentially hated Ronda Rousey. They couldn't stand her. They said she was a bitch from the moment she sat down to the moment she got up. And I wanted to like Ronda Rousey because she did a rare thing for me, and that's make me interested in women's wrestling. You know, like very few have been able to do, like a China, for example. So there was an appeal there. But unfortunately, she is probably just a bitch. And it came out, And you wanted to pull for her, and she left WWE, and all this stuff is coming out, and she's talking. So some of this is coming from the horse's mouth, so to speak. And it's like, damn, she really is like unlikable, you know? And then you're like, yeah, okay, I'm glad she's gone. Screw her, whatever. I don't think she did herself any favors whatsoever. I think it's made her a lot less likable. And I don't understand it at all.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we're always proud to have Mama Show. I give you once again from the hit podcast Unleashed with Brad Shepherd. I could be Brad Shepherd. So, Brad, before we let you go, where can fans check you out at? Where is the Twitter, Instagram, the website, the Spotify? Where can fans check out your show?
So, my show is coming soon. You can get all of the information on Brad Shepherd Unleashed on my X account. It's at B-Shep Unleashed, B-E-S-H-E-P Unleashed. That's where you'll find all the information on the return of Brad Shepherd Unleashed, a top 10% global podcast. Hey, you guys, you called my name three times, just like Beetlejuice. I'm back, and we're going to kick some ass.
Brad Shepherd, ladies and gentlemen, once again, always an honor, pleasure to have you on the show. We come back, a lot more going on here, only on It's Last Call. Last Call to the Alcohol, only on the Last Call Podcast.com.